afternoon, ladies. He looked around. What's so funny? Mel tried to get herself under control as she replied. Nothing, nothing. We were just talking about something is all. Sarge narrowed his eyes. Something, huh? It's been my experience that a bunch of women sitting around are never just talking. As Mel and Bobby started to laugh again, Miss Kay got up and told Sarge to take a seat. I looked at Mel with a questioning glance. She waved me off. Guess I'll hear about it later. We took seats at one of the picnic tables as Miss Kay carried a large pot out and set it on the table. Bobby went in and came back out with a stack of bowls, and we were each handed a steaming bowl of soup. After blowing the steam off, I took a bite. This is really good. What is it? Just a vegetable stew, Miss Kay replied. Looking at the bowl, I asked, No meat? We're running really low on meat, Mel said. I can't hunt the squirrels anymore. There's nothing left to hunt now, Little Bit said. She was sitting on the floor, working on a large puzzle.
Oh, there's always something to hunt, kiddo, I said.
Yeah, we'll find something, Danny added.
This sure is good stew, Miss Kay, Sarge said.
Thank you, Linus, she replied with a smile.
You guys need to figure something out about meat, Bobby said.
Thad, you gonna eat? Danny called out.
Thad looked up and smiled. He spoke to Mary and headed for the porch. As he took a seat, he said, Sorry, I just gotta tend my plants.
Yeah, you're tending something, I replied with a smile.
Thad visibly blushed, and I laughed at him. He shook his head and said,
You a mess, Morgan, and set the bowl of stew in front of him.
After a couple of bites, he looked up at the ladies.
This is really good.
Miss Kay cooked it. We just prepared the veggies, Mel said. Nodding his head, Thad said,
Whoever did, it's good. You ladies surely do make the most of what we have.
So you guys are going to string some fence today? Sarge asked.
Just hot wire. Give them pigs some place to forage, Thad said.
Sarge nodded and scooped another spoonful.
Out behind the pasture in the woods?
Thad nodded, and Sarge added,
I'll send someone over to provide security for you guys.
That would be good, Danny said. Finishing up lunch, I gave Mel a kiss as she was filling a bowl with stew. Is that for Taylor? I asked. She nodded.
Yeah, she's sleeping. I'll take her some lunch.
How's she feeling? Setting the bowl on the counter, Mel replied. She was in good spirits before taking her nap.
And that made me feel good, too. Very good.
She turned around.
You going to be here for dinner?
Of course. We're just going to be putting up some wire. I'll be over by Thad's house. She smiled.
Wonderful.
Thank you, ladies, for the lunch. It was delicious as always, Sarge said, as he picked up his carbine.
You're welcome, guys, Bobby said. Then she added, Go find us some meat.
Some meat would be nice, Miss Kay said.
Slinging my carbine, I said, I'll see what we can do.
We headed off to get started stringing the wire. It would make it a lot easier dealing with the pigs, not having to feed them in the pen. We stopped by my place so I could grab a machete and an axe before heading over to Thad's. At the barn, Thad pointed out a large pile of yellow plastic insulators and a couple rolls of wire.
I've been scrounging them all over the neighborhood. There's still a lot out there I didn't get.
Yeah, almost everyone around here used it in one form or another, Danny said.
Hearing us at the barn, the pigs started making a ruckus, squealing and banging into the sides of the pen. I looked in at them.
Looks like they're hungry. Thad smiled. They're always hungry. They're pigs.
He then pointed out a large sow.
Look how low her belly is. She's going to drop a litter any day.
Danny laughed.
Looks like she could use a skateboard under that belly.
I picked up a bucket full of insulators and said,
Well, let's get to it.
Thad went to get a couple of hammers and Danny grabbed the wire. We walked out to the back of the pasture and looked the woods over. When Thad showed up, I asked him what he was thinking.
He pointed to the south.
The woods go back there for a couple hundred yards before turning to pasture again. I was thinking of clearing a line right off the edge of the fence there and running straight through, then cut across the edge of pasture. Then cut a line back on the other side, and we'll have them hemmed in.
You want to keep the wire about a foot off the ground? Danny asked.
Thad nodded. That'd be plenty. They only need to touch it once or twice before they figure it out. Pulling the machete out of its sheath, I said, I'll start cutting a line.
And so we got to work. I started clearing brush with the machete. It wasn't always a straight line as I would weave back and forth to allow for large trees. They would make good places to nail in the insulators. Thad and Danny worked behind me, hanging those. The bush in the area wasn't very thick and made the job of clearing it pretty easy. The hardest part was actually the edge of the pasture. I made it through the wood line without too much trouble. But once at the transition line, between the woods and pasture, the grass proved to be quite thick. It took a lot of chopping to clear it and the other brush. It was hard work, but I actually enjoyed it. It kept my mind off things that had taken place earlier, something I still haven't really processed. But lately, I enjoyed any kind of work that put a tool other than a firearm in my hand. I was on my knees, hacking at the tall grass, when Jamie walked up. I looked up to her, holding a sickle, and looking at me with a smirk on her face.
Wouldn't this be a lot easier?
I shook my head.
I guess it would. Didn't even think about trying to get a better tool.
She tossed it to me.
I watched you for a while and finally took pity on you and asked Thad if he knew where one was. With a smirk of my own, I asked, just how long did you watch before taking pity on me?
Till I started to get tired, she replied with a laugh.
Picking up the curved blade, I said, hope I didn't wear you out. It certainly made the job of cutting the grass a lot easier. Thad and Danny caught up to me because of the slow going and pitched in to help. With Jamie and Ian hanging around to keep an eye on us, we finished up the line and had insulators hung all the way around the patch of woods by early evening. Thad wiped his forehead with a rag as he looked down the cleared line.
We'll string the wire tomorrow and let those hogs loose.
Ian looked around the patch of woods.
Is there anything in there they can eat?
Oh yeah, plenty, Danny replied.
Ian shook his head.
I don't see anything. You get out there and root around and you'll find plenty, Thad offered.
Jamie laughed.
Yeah, Ian, get out there and root around. Want me to help you rub your face in the dirt?
Ian snorted. You wish. Jamie smiled.
You have no idea how much.
Now I had to laugh.
Why don't you two just go ahead and bump uglies and get it over with?
Jamie looked as though she'd just seen a unicorn. Ian, however, broke out in a raucous laugh, bending over and holding his stomach. Jamie's face narrowed, and she glared at me, but didn't say anything.
It made me laugh.
Shrugging, I said,
just saying.
Thad started to laugh as well, until Jamie cut her eyes to him. The smile on his face faded as he started collecting tools and headed for the barn. Danny was smiling and shaking his head as we followed Thad's lead. We left Ian and Jamie to stew. Well, Jamie was certainly stewing.
I'm going to the house to get cleaned up before dinner, Danny said.
Sounds good to me, I replied.
We met Thad at the barn, where he was putting tools away, as the pigs complained. He turned as we walked up.
What are you two going to do now?
Go take a shower before dinner, Danny replied.
Thad smiled. Me too. That water tower is the best thing since sliced bread.
I snorted.
You got sliced bread you're holding out?
Thad laughed.
I wish. I guess the water tower is better than sliced bread since we ain't got any.
How's the water temp? Danny asked.
It's perfect. It's warm, but not too hot. Perfect.
But it gets a little colder in the winter, I said.
I've been thinking about that. I'm going to look around for all the black spray paint I can find and paint the tank. During the winter, it'll help keep it warm, Thad said.
Better than nothing, Danny added.
With a nod, I said, "All right, lads, I'm off. See you at dinner."
Thad went in the house and grabbed a change of clothes and a towel before heading down the hall to the bathroom. He could hear the water running when he got to the door and knocked.
"I'll be done in a minute," Jess's voice called back.
Thad smiled and went back out to the living room and sat down on the couch. Since the water tower was installed, the girls were showering every day. Thad kept an eye on the tank, and just as he'd suspected, the level dropped dramatically the first couple of days before seeming to slow some. He was going to have to fill it soon, like tomorrow, probably. But there was still sufficient pressure for a shower and to fill the toilets. He sat on the couch for what seemed like an eternity. Getting a little annoyed, he got up and started down the hall. Just then, the bathroom door opened, and Jess stepped out, wrapped in a towel, with another one wrapped around her head. She smiled sheepishly.
"Sorry, it just feels so good."
Thad smiled. It was his natural response.
"I know it does, but you know, I have to fill that thing."
Bobbing her head, she replied,
"I know, I know. It just feels so good. The water is warmer than at Danny's, and I can take one every day."
His smile broadening a little as he replied,
"And you can help fill that tank tomorrow, too."
Jess stepped over, and, standing on her tiptoes, she wrapped her arms around his neck.
"I love you too, Thad."
Then she kissed him on the cheek, before quickly heading to her room. Blushing, Thad replied,
"I love you too."
"I know you do,"
she shouted back, as she shut the door. Smiling and shaking his head, Thad went into the bathroom. He'd take a little longer with his shower, too. After all, it was really warm water. We stopped by the bunker as we passed. The girls were gone, and Mike and Ted were there with Dalton now.
"You guys on for a while?"
I asked. Ted nodded.
"Yeah, me and Tweedledum here."
"Guess that makes you Tweedledee, then," Mike shot back.
Looking over his shoulder, Ted said,
"Yeah, I got the D and the
Mike shrugged.
"You are a subject matter expert on dumb."
Ted laughed.
"After spending so many years with your dumbass, I am indeed."
I laughed and looked at Dalton.
"So, what's that make you?"
He jumped up on top of the bunker and struck a pose with his hands on his hips.
"Why, the Mad Hatter, of course."
And he followed it with a maniacal laugh. Ted looked up at him.
"Yes, yes, you are."
Laughing, I added, "Indeed." Danny pointed to a long green tube leaned against the side of the bunker.
"What's that?"
Mike smiled.
"That's a goose. It's a recoilless rifle. It blows shit up."
Danny was impressed.
"Nice."
"Yeah. Those assholes show up with another MRAP, and I'm turning it into scrap metal," Mike replied.
"It's nice to have something to deal with them," I added.
Ted nudged the weapon with the toe of his boot.
"This will more than deal with them."
"Let's just hope we don't need to," Danny said.
We all agreed to that sentiment. We said goodbye and headed home. I wanted to check on Taylor and hang out with her a little while. As we walked, I looked at the little raised spot on my arm where the TB shot was given. Danny looked over and asked,
"How's it looking?"
I shrugged.
"Hell if I know. Looks swollen to me. But I wouldn't know good from bad."
"Doc check it lately?"
"Going to have him look at it at dinner."
"Hopefully it's good news."
I shrugged. "I don't think I have it. I mean, I don't feel sick. I'm not coughing or anything. I'm sure it's fine. But it's still kind of creepy waiting."
Danny grunted.
"No shit. I wouldn't want to."
I looked sideways at him. "You know, if it's positive, then everyone's going to have to be tested, if they have enough tests." Danny cut his eyes at me.
"Then you better be negative."
Laughing, I replied,
"I'm pretty negative these days."
Danny laughed.
"Yeah, I guess."
Then, with a serious tone, he added, "But you better be negative." I laughed as I slapped him on the back, and we parted ways in my driveway. Little Bit was sitting on the porch with the dogs when I walked up. Meathead's tail thumped the porch
as she scratched his belly. Drake barely lifted his eyes to acknowledge my arrival. At least little sister got up after stretching and wandered over for her obligatory scratching.
"Look at these lazy dogs," I said with a smile.
Little Bit looked up. "They're so cute."
"They're lazy," I replied with a laugh.
She lay on the floor and snuggled up to Meathead and smiled.
"I like it."
Grinning, I shook my head.
"How can you snuggle up to that smelly hound?"
Meathead rolled his head over and licked her face.
"He doesn't smell that bad."
I laughed and went inside. Mel was sitting in the living room and looked up from a book. In the before, she never read. It just wasn't normal for her to sit and read. Now, however, she and Bobby scoured the houses for books, and both of them were always reading. If they weren't reading, then they were talking about books. I guess that was a bit of a return to the old ways. Books were now, once again, a distraction, an escape from the harsh realities of daily life. They seemed to really get into the romance novels. Little Bit also spent a lot of time reading, though she preferred adventure stories with fairies and dragons. I had a stack of books too, though I'd already read most of mine from before. For the rest of the group, they weren't much fun to read. Books on edible plants and the Foxfire series weren't nearly as exciting as romantic interludes on a sailboat or the trials of a fairy princess.
"What you reading there, babe?"
I asked as I sat on the couch. Folding the book closed, she laid it cover down in her lap. With a smile, she replied,
"Nothing you'd be interested in."
I reached and turned the book over to expose the cover, depicting some muscled hunk with no shirt on. With a laugh, I said,
"Not going to learn much in there that'll help us out."
She turned her book over. "That's your job."
"How's Taylor?" I asked.
"Good."
"She's reading some vampire book."
I rolled my eyes.
"Oh, God, I remember those things. Back into that, huh?"
"She can't really do much right now. It's good for her." Standing up, I said, "I'm going to check on her." Mel opened her book.
"Good. I need to see what Blake does."
Shaking my head, I wandered down the hall. Stopping at her door, I tapped on it.
"Come in."
I opened the door and was met with a smile.
"Hey, Dad."
I sat on the edge of her bed and ran my hand over her head.
"Hey, kiddo. How are you feeling today?"
She perked up.
"I'm feeling really good today. I walked to the bathroom by myself. Mom was there, but I didn't let her help me. I did it all by myself."
I leaned over and hugged her.
"That's awesome. You'll be out of this bed regularly in no time."
"I can't wait. I'm so sick of being here." She laid her book down and looked at me.
"I want to get up and back to normal."
"You will. Just don't rush it." She rolled her eyes. "I just want to be able to get out of bed and sit on the couch or maybe the porch. Plus, I want to be able to walk over to Bobby's when we eat. It sucks being in here all alone."
"Well, you spent a couple of days walking around the house, and we'll get you over to Bobby's."
She smiled.
"Thanks, Dad."
Before I could reply, there was a sudden flurry of voices in the living room. I looked down the hall to see Leanne, Fred, and Jess. Mel was talking to them.
I looked at Taylor. "I'll get out of here. Looks like you have visitors."
"Yeah, we're going to play Scrabble. Can I go out to the dining room so we can play on the table?"
"Of course," I replied with a smile as I left the room.
Walking into the living room, Jess looked at me.
"Hey, Morgan."
I looked at her, then around the room.
"What's that smell?"
She smiled.
"It's perfume, if you must know."
"You know, you can shower now, right?"
I replied.
With her hands on her hips, she shot back. "For your information, I did."
Flipping her hair, she replied in a dismissive tone.
"A girl can still dress up."
It was then I noticed she was wearing a dress. I'd never seen her in a dress. For the first time, she actually looked like a woman. A pretty damn fine one at that.
"Wow, I just noticed."
"Doesn't she look beautiful?" Mel asked. I nodded.
"Yeah,"
and my mind started turning.
What are you two up to? I asked, looking at Fred. She was in a dress, too, with cowboy boots, no less. Fred started laughing, twirling her skirt. She said, We just felt pretty today.
Where's Eric?
This is a girl's night, Jess said, as she waltzed past me. Fred followed her.
Yeah.
Little Bit came out of her room in a dress, too.
Daddy, it's girl's night.
What the hell is going on here? I asked, shaking my head. Mel stood up and headed for the bedroom.
You heard them. It's girl's night, so you need to find some place to go.
Jess laughed.
Yeah.
Don't go away, Mad. Just go away. I walked into the kitchen, mumbling to myself about my house being taken over and being asked to make myself scarce in no uncertain terms. I went to the fridge and poured myself a cup of tea before heading for the bedroom as well. Mel was beside the bed, pulling a dress of her own up over one shoulder. I gave her a little whistle.
Maybe you should do girls' night more often, I said, as I moved towards her.
She stopped me with a hand on my chest.
I don't think so, mister. This is girls' night, and I don't mean the porno kind either.
I looked her up and down. She looked amazing in the dress, standing barefoot in our room.
Aw, come on, I pleaded.
She pulled the dress over her other shoulder and turned. Lifting her hair, she said, Zip me up. I stepped close to her and slowly pulled the zipper up her back. She spun around and gave me a kiss, then asked what I was doing.
I'm going to take a shower.
She looked down at me with a devilish grin and said,
Looks like you could use one. A cold one.
You're evil, woman. She leaned in close and whispered in my ear.
I know.
Now hurry up and get out of here. As she left the room, I heard Bobby come in the front door. It was turning into an estrogen fest out there, but I had to smile. They were just having fun. Like little girls, they were all playing dress-up. There was no reason now to ever dress up or try to look good, but they obviously needed it. It gave me an idea, one that would take some time to put together, but I think everyone would like. I showered and dressed in clean clothes. Looking at the laundry pile, I knew it would soon be time to get the wash done. It was a bit of a chore not using the machine. We could run the generator for it, but it was a waste of precious fuel. Mel fought tooth and nail for a long time about it, but finally gave in. Of course, I had to help. It was a lot of work. I wish I'd invested in one of the numerous wash systems I looked at before. They seemed a little expensive at the time, and I always thought, I can build that. But I never did. Now I would gladly pay twice the price for one. Coming out of the bedroom, I was met with laughter. The ladies were in the living room, queuing up a video on the laptop. I was saying my goodbyes, looking to make a hasty escape, when another woman appeared from the hallway leading to the bathroom. I didn't recognize her and stared for a moment. Like the others, she too was in a pretty dress and cowboy boots. She crossed her arms over her chest and cocked her hips to the side.
What?
She asked. Then I realized it was Jamie. I'd never even imagined her in something other than BDUs she always wore, but she looked amazing. Still surprised, I simply replied,
Nothing.
Then quit staring at me like a slack-jawed fool, she said, as she passed me. I smiled and turned to the door. Pausing, I turned back around. You ladies all look beautiful tonight. I thought it was a nice gesture, but I was met with shouts, various objects thrown in my direction, and several orders to get out. Still smiling, I left the house to the ladies. I made my way over to Danny's house. He was sitting on the front porch.
Come on up and grab a chair, he said, motioning to the rocker beside him.
Did you see any of them? I asked, as I sat down.
Just Bobby, when she was leaving.
You should see my house. They're all in there, even Jamie, and they're all dressed up, makeup and everything.
Yeah, Bobby said they wanted a girls' night. Shaking my head, I replied, Seems like a waste. There's some hot-ass women over there.
Then I looked at Danny.
Who knew?
Danny laughed. Probably a good thing. Could you imagine some of these guys around here seeing them all dolled up?
Yeah, I guess. I replied. Then a smirk appeared on my face. I imagine it would be hard on Mike's face. I have a feeling he knows what it's like to be slapped. Ian, too. I think Jamie would take him down, dress and all. Then I laughed. He'd probably try to piss her off just to get her to do it. She looked good. They all did. You should see the dress Mel was wearing. Let them have their fun. The door opened, and Miss Kay stuck her head out. You boys hungry? Standing up, I replied. Yes, ma'am. Well, come on in here, and let's get you fed. As we followed her into the house, I asked, Why aren't you over at the party? Mary was standing in the kitchen. We had to make sure you guys got your supper. Over her shoulder, Miss Kay added, Someone has to do it. We could have fended for ourselves, Danny said. Miss Kay turned and smiled. Oh, I'm sure you could have, but it wasn't a bother. The way she said it, though, led me to believe she didn't really think we could. Tonight's dinner was the leftovers from lunch. Nothing ever went to waste. When a meal was prepared, it was eaten until it was gone. We were soon joined by Thad and Dalton. And about the time Danny and I finished our meal, Sarge, Perez, and Ian showed up. You're late. We ate it all, Thad said, as they came through the door. Just couldn't wait, could you? Sarge fired back. Like one big dog does another, I replied. Sarge grunted. Big dog my ass. He came up beside me at the table. Move your ass, pup. I smiled and picked up my bowl to make room for him. Don't let him bother you, Linus. You know I have some for you, Miss Kay said, as she set a bowl in front of him. Sarge smiled at her. I know you do. I always let the kids eat before I do. Thad smiled. Who you calling a kid, little man? Chewing a mouthful of stew, Sarge pointed his spoon at Thad. It ain't the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog. Still smiling, Thad raised his arm, making a muscle. This dog's got plenty of fight. Sarge nodded. I know you do. I just have to shoot your big ass. Thad's smile quickly faded and he laughed, blowing stew out his nose and mouth. We all started to laugh as Perez wiped the mess from his arm, having caught most of it. Ay, Dios míos, Perez groaned. Sarge was laughing at Perez and said, How many times I gotta tell you, English, you chili chomper? Usted vieja cabra, Perez shot back. Sarge laughed even harder now and looked across the table, doing his best impression of a goat. Bah, ha, ha, ha! In a calm, almost quiet voice, Dalton said, La cabra siempre tira al monte. See? He knows, Sarge shouted. What the hell did you say? Danny asked. The goat always seeks out the mountain heights, Dalton replied, giving Sarge a nod. Shaking my head, I said, You suck any harder and your eyes will cross. Dalton busted out into a deep laugh, joined by several others. Even Sarge laughed, adding, Don't let him fool you. Never underestimate the value of ass-kissing. Perez leaned over and patted his ass cheek. Come here, old man. I've got some work for you. Sarge snorted. Pick a spot, Beaner. You're all ass. The reply got a smile from Perez. Shaking his head, he turned his attention back to his meal. I carried my bowl into the kitchen. Mary took it from me. I'll take care of this. You don't have to clean up after me. Why aren't you over there? I asked. We're going over in a bit. We just wanted to make sure dinner was taken care of. Good. You two need to go have some fun, too, I replied. Where are you going, Morgan? Sarge called. Headed to the bunker to relieve the guys so they can come eat. All right, I'll stop by later. Need to talk about tomorrow. Danny was on duty with me, and we walked to the bunker together. I could hear slaps and Mike bitching as we got closer. As we walked up, he jumped down from the roof of the bunker. Thank God you're here. What's eating your ass? I asked. Collecting his gear, he replied, Oh, you'll see soon enough. Mosquitoes are driving him nuts tonight, and in turn, he's driving me nuts, Ted said. Mike slapped at another of the bloodsuckers. I've never seen them like this before.
They are pretty bad, Ted added, as he slammed his palm against his forehead.
You guys go get something to eat. We'll take it from here, Danny said.
You have my pity, Ted said, as they headed off. Danny slapped at his arm.
Damn, they are bad.
I was waving the little bastards away from my head.
Yeah, they are.
Let me go get something that will help. I walked back up the road towards my house. I knew what I was looking for grew just a little ways away. Finding the beautyberry bush, I cut several leafy stems and carried them back to the bunker. I handed several of them to Danny. Here, strip the leaves like this and crush them up. Rub it on your face and neck, your arms too. I was going through the motions as I said it. The leaves have a pungent odor that mosquitoes don't like. While not as effective as chemical repellents, it's certainly better than nothing.
How well does this work? Danny asked.
It's better than nothing, I said. Then I took another couple of stems and crushed the leaves, leaving them on the stalk. Taking off my boonie hat, I wove the thin stems into the nylon webbing. Hang it around your head, too. Danny did the same as I had, though he made a wreath to lay over his ball cap. It did help keep them off our faces and neck. Our arms, though, were a different story. I need to remember to wear long sleeves, Danny said. As I rolled my sleeves down, I said, It doesn't help much. They bite right through it. We settled into trying to ignore the bugs while at the same time trying to keep them off us. They would be bad for a while and begin to taper off later. In an effort to distract myself, I pulled out the little AM-FM shortwave radio from a pocket on my vest. I'd started carrying it around and scanning through the bands every now and then. On a clear night like this, I could usually pick up several foreign stations, though I'd yet to find anything broadcast from here. To increase the reception of the small radio, I would string a wire antenna into a tree. It was in a small reel and had a clip to connect it to the telescoping antenna on the radio. Beside the bunker was a small persimmon tree. We'd left it because Danny and I both knew this tree bore fruit. With the antenna up, I sat on the roof of the bunker and turned the little radio on. As I started scanning through the bands, I heard Doc's voice from the darkness.
Hey, Morgan, let me take a look at your arm.
Where the hell have you been hiding? I asked, as I rolled my sleeve up.
I was at the house, he replied, as I stretched my arm out.
He took my arm and turned on a small light to inspect the test site. Doc pulled a small paper marked with measurements and laid it on my arm. He looked up and smiled.
Looks like you're in the clear. It hasn't grown any, so you're good to go.
I let out the breath I didn't know I was holding.
Thanks, Doc. I was really worried.
Can't say I blame you, but you're out of the woods.
Good,
Danny said, from the other side of the bunker. You going to hang out? I asked. Wiping a mosquito from his ear, Doc replied,
Yeah, why not? Got nothing else to do.
He looked at the little radio and asked,
What's that?
Picking it up, I replied,
It's a small shortwave. I like to scan the bands and see what I can hear.
Pick up anything? As I turned the radio on, I said, Lots of foreign stuff. Nothing to speak of, though. I set the radio on one of the bands and pressed the scan button, and the radio began scrolling through the frequencies. After a moment, it stopped on one, but it was rapid-fire Spanish.
Figures, I said,
and pressed the scan button again. It continued on for a bit and found several more Spanish stations, one German, and what I think was French, but in a strange accent. With no luck on that band, I switched the radio to another and pressed the scan button again. This time, it hit a station that was actually in English. Not just English, but from the way it sounded, it was someone with a Midwestern accent.
I'm moving across the DHS in the suburbs of Atlanta.
Doc slapped me on the arm and pointed at the radio as the voice continued.
An intense house-to-house fighting. The Marines are gaining ground. The fighting is intense, as it is now apparent. The feds armed street gangs that were fighting alongside them.
In the south, the Navy has secured the ExxonMobil refinery in Baton Rouge. Pumping continues in offshore rigs with assistance from Navy Seabees and auxiliary ships providing power to the rigs. With the addition of the production capacity of the Baton Rouge plant, the fuel limitations are now easing, allowing additional strikes against federal targets. However, the plant is not up to full capacity as a result of sabotage that caused moderate damage and several casualties among plant workers. The injured were airlifted to Fort Polk and are being treated by the 115th Combat Support Hospital. God bless the men and women of our armed forces fighting the good fight on behalf of the people of this nation. You're listening to John Jacob Schmidt on the Radio Free Redoubt, broadcasting to all of you in occupied territory, as well as those outside the wire, bringing you the news you need in these uncertain times. On the international front, the UN Security Council today released a statement saying that the deteriorating situation in North America is becoming a humanitarian crisis. The Secretary General of the UN, Hussein Turboko, has asked the Security Council to consider a resolution to send UN peacekeepers to the U.S. in an attempt to quell the violence. The U.K. ambassador to the UN objected vehemently to the proposal, as did the Canadians and Australians. However, before the motion was even brought to the floor for discussion, the Russians and Chinese both said they were willing to assist the U.S. in this, their greatest time of need. Marine General Bill Poehler replied to the UN in unequivocal terms, stating that any foreign troops setting foot on U.S. soil will be seen as an invading force and dealt with accordingly. I was stunned by what I was hearing. We'd been in the dark for so long about what the rest of the world was doing, and now all of a sudden we hear the Chinese and Russians want to invade. Apparently, I wasn't the only one surprised. At some point, Danny came over and said exactly what I was thinking. What the hell? Doc was a little more certain in his response. Fuck them. Those bastards try that shit, and we'll be shooting blue helmets as well as black ones. The broadcast continued. I don't think they will like their reception. Tune in at 2100 hours for our next update. A woman's voice then came on. Good evening, patriots. Prepare for a message. After a 10-second pause, she continued. The maple tree sings a lullaby. The maple tree sings a lullaby. And then she proceeded to read off a series of numbers. 291-85-39458-89085-57723-31931-94832-49495-22840. As the woman repeated the message a second time, I asked Doc if we should have copied it. When she finished the message, AC/DC's Thunderstruck came on. Yeah, probably, Doc replied. Who the hell is this? Danny asked. I don't know, Doc replied. But they're obviously sending coded messages to someone. You think you can decode it? Danny asked. Shaking his head, Doc responded. Without the code sheet, I don't even think the NSA could decode it. I know who they are. I used to listen to Radio Free Redoubt. They ran AMRON radio nets around the country. This is exactly the kind of thing they trained for back then. We'll have to start checking for their broadcasts. Don't know why I haven't come across this until now, I said. Doc's face was suddenly illuminated in a bright orange glow. We all looked towards the source of the light and saw a large ball of flame rising into the sky as a loud boom hit us. Doc realized what we were looking at first. That's Tyler and Brandy's place. It's on fire. As Doc was about to run towards the house, a large caliber machine gun began firing at the bunker. The heavy bullet slammed into the log structure, sending us diving to the ground. Danny shouted, "What the hell is going on?" I crawled into the bunker and chanced to peek out of one of the firing ports. "There's a truck down there, one of those armored ones." Doc came crawling in and shouted at Danny, "Get the goose and toss it in here." Small arms fire began to sound from behind us.
I could hear numerous weapons firing and started to worry about Mel and the girls. Then I heard the unmistakable sound of two shotgun blasts in rapid succession. That had to be Thad and his coach gun. Danny tossed the Gustav into the bunker, and I heard him start cussing. I looked back to see him and Dalton, trying to get free of one another. Dalton looked into the bunker. "They're coming in from the back, too. But I think they're under control." As he spoke, there was a large explosion to the back of the neighborhood. Dalton smiled. "That'll teach the bastards." Mel and the rest of the girls were watching Dirty Dancing on my laptop. There were oil lamps and candles set around the living room, and they were busy talking and laughing over the movie when they heard the boom. Jamie was instantly on her feet, carbine in hand, as she moved towards the front door. "What was that?" Bobby asked. As Jamie got to the front door and looked out the window, she shouted, "Fire! Brandy's house is on fire!" She was reaching for the doorknob when the sliding glass door leading to the back porch shattered, sending glass flying into the dining room. Little Bit screamed and pulled a pillow from the sofa over her head. Jamie spun as two men came through the opening. She began firing as she brought the weapon up to her shoulder. The lead man went down, and the one behind him stumbled over the body and fired at the same time, sending a wild spray of bullets into the house. Drywall dust and insulation rained down. Jamie fell back against the door and onto the floor as the man tried to regain his feet. Leanne ran into the kitchen from the opposite side while the man's attention was focused on the entry into the living room. She raised her H&K and squeezed the trigger, letting out a long burst of 9mm. Mel got to her feet, and she, Fred, and Jess rounded the corner to the kitchen. At the same moment, a third man appeared in the shattered glass door. The second man was on the floor, riddled with bullets. The three women all raised their pistols and fired in unison, sending a hail of lead into the man in the door. He never had a chance to pull the trigger. Mel looked over her shoulder and shouted at Mary, "Get Ashley to the bathroom!" Mary quickly grabbed her with one hand and Miss Kay by the other and ran towards the bathroom. Thad, Sarge, Mike, and Ted were all sitting on the back porch of Danny's house after dinner, talking. Miss Kay and Mary had left to hang out with the rest of the ladies and watch a movie. It was dark, having turned off the lanterns to conserve fuel. They were talking about the need to hit the Elks camp and how Sarge thought it should be done when they heard the boom. They were instantly on their feet and ran to the front of the house. They were coming out of Danny's gate onto the road when they ran directly into a group of six raiders. In the darkness, none had seen the other until they collided in the road. Mike, being younger and faster, had crashed into the two men of the group, them falling to the ground in a heap of flailing arms and legs. Ted hit the light from his carbine to reveal the other four men, who were obviously caught off guard. He began to fire as Thad pulled the coach gun from his back scabbard. Sarge began firing on the men with Ted, who were shooting back in a panic. But this was all taking place at contact range. They could physically touch one another. The two men Mike ran into were fighting with him. One of the men had a grip on Mike's carbine and was jerking it to keep him from getting his feet under him. With the single-point sling wrapped around him, it was as good as a handle. Mike fumbled for the quick release, trying to disconnect himself from the weapon. The second man charged Mike and wrapped him in a bear hug from behind. Thad stepped up and swung the coach gun at the crown of the man's head with all the force he could muster, which was considerable. He split the man's skull and he collapsed. As the body hit the ground, Thad fired one barrel into the man's face. At the same moment, Mike finally found the release and the weapon came free. Both he and the man he struggled with fell back away from one another. Mike drew his pistol as he fell and fired when his ass hit the ground. Thad swung the old shotgun around, holding it at arm's length, and pulled the second trigger, sending a load of number 4 buck into the man's chest, along with the hail of 45 rounds Mike was raining into the man. Thad dropped the shotgun and drew his pistol, spinning around and looking for more targets. Ted and Sarge were back to back doing the same thing. Six bodies were on the ground around them. Mike got to his feet and picked up his carbine.
"Anybody hit?"
Sarge asked. Everyone patted themselves and replied in the negative. In the light from Ted's carbine, Thad said, "Ted, your head's bleeding." Ted reached up and felt the warm wetness on the side of his head. Sarge grabbed his chin, turning Ted's head to the side.
"You're all right. Shot the top of your ear off."
He patted Ted's shoulder. "You're one lucky son of a bitch." Ted was pawing at his ear.
"What do you mean, shot it off? Is it gone?" "Hell yeah, it's gone. Come on, we'll worry about that later," Sarge said, as he started towards Tyler's place.
Ted searched the ground with his light.
"We've got to find it."
"For what?
Not like we can put it back on. What are you going to do, make a damn necklace out of it?"
Sarge shot back. Ted was in mild shock.
"Fuck that, it's my ear."
Sarge grabbed Ted by his plate carrier.
"Get your head out of your ass. This shit ain't over, and you know there's no medicine in a gunfight. We'll tend to your grape when this shit's over. Now get your ass in gear."
Mike ran past Ted and slapped him on the shoulder.
"Come on, Teddy. Let's get these fuckers."
Ted looked down at the men on the ground.
"Shot my ear off, you sons of bitches."
And he proceeded to stomp one of the bodies in the face. Ted looked up with a wild expression, let out a scream, and then took off after Mike. Thad picked up the coach gun and broke the action open. The two spent shells ejected, and he dropped in two more. Sarge looked at him.
"You okay, Thad?"
Thad nodded and was about to reply when there was an explosion from the back of the neighborhood. Sarge looked in the direction of the sound and said,
"That's Dalton's IED. Let's go take a look."
Thad nodded, and they moved down the road in the direction of the explosion. Mel looked around the house.
"Is everyone okay? Is anyone hurt?"
Taylor was on the floor searching frantically.
"Where's my gun? I can't find my gun."
"I think we're all right," Jess said. Mel looked at Leanne.
"Go check on Ashley. They're in the bathroom."
Leanne nodded as she methodically removed the magazine from her H&K and placed a fresh one in. She pulled the bolt back slightly and checked to make sure it was chambered, and walked to the bathroom.
"Ah, shit,"
Jamie said. She was lying on the floor in front of the door, looking at her blood-covered hand.
"Oh, God, Jamie's hurt," Fred yelled.
They rushed to her side.
"Are you okay? Where is it?"
Jess asked. Mel looked around.
"We need to blow these lights out. Taylor, can you take care of that for us?"
Taylor was getting to her feet, having found her weapon on the floor under pillows from the sofa. She began extinguishing the candles and lanterns. Fred reached over and took one oil lamp from the top of a bookshelf and brought it over beside Jamie.
"Let me see it," she said, as she moved Jamie's hand.
"Son of a bitch, I really like this dress. First time I wear a dress and I get fucking shot,"
Jamie shouted. Miss Kay came out of the hallway, tripping over the piles of pillows on the floor.
"Who's hurt?"
"Jess, get my vest. There's a blowout kit on it," Jamie said. Mel could hear Little Bit crying in the bathroom. She looked at Fred.
"I have to go check on Ashley."
Fred nodded, and Mel left. Little Bit and Mary were in the bathtub. Mary had her arms wrapped around the small girl as they both cried. Mel knelt down beside the tub.
"Are you okay?"
she asked, as Little Bit reached out and wrapped her arms around her mother. Mel then looked at Mary.
"Are you all right?"
Mary wiped tears from her face and sniffled.
"Guess I'm not very brave."
Mel put her hand on Mary's.
"You're as brave as any of us."
Mel smiled, and Mary smiled back.
"Can you help me out of here?"
Mary asked, as she tried to extract herself from the tub. Mel picked up Little Bit and offered a hand to Mary and helped pull her from the tub. Doc pulled the Gustav over and prepared it to fire. He peeked up over the side of the bunker.
I can't really see the damn thing. I'm just going to aim below the muzzle flashes.
He shouldered the weapon while crouching, then stood up enough for the weapon to clear the side of the bunker. I was standing beside him when he shouted,
"Back blast! Clear!"
Dalton grabbed me and jerked me to the ground as Doc fired. Inside the bunker, the blast and concussion were intense. My ears rang, and the small space was choked with dust. I didn't hear the resulting explosion and could barely breathe. Doc dropped the weapon and stumbled towards the rear exit. Dalton pushed me out the doorway before coming out himself. He looked around for a moment, then stuck his head back in. He reappeared, dragging Danny by the leg. We were all covered in dust and dirt. It was our eyes, our ears, our mouths. I was blinking, trying to get the dust out of my eyes, and pulled a canteen from the vest and started to wash them out. Dalton grabbed the canteen from me and poured water on his face as well. Danny was complaining about his eyes, so Dalton knelt down and pulled Danny's hands from his face.
"Don't rub your eyes. You'll just make it worse."
He began pouring water on Danny's face.
"Blink. Blink your eyes."
"I can't." Dalton lifted one of his eyelids and poured water directly into the eye. Doc was coughing up dust as well and trying to clear his eyes.
"Did you hit it?"
I asked, trying to blink the crap from my own eyes.
"I think so. They aren't shooting anymore."
"We need to go check on Tyler and Brandy," I said. Dalton handed me the canteen.
"Here, keep trying to wash his eyes out. I'll go."
All the while, AC/DC still blared from the small radio. The song was just over 5 minutes long, and it was only now coming to an end. That 5 minutes seemed like an eternity. There was a sudden burst of gunfire. I looked over the top of the bunker to see a burning hulk at the end of the road. What appeared to be one rifle was firing up there somewhere, but I couldn't tell where.
"Someone is still up there," I said.
Doc looked over.
"I don't think they're shooting at us, though."
I strained to see where the sporadic gunfire was coming from, but couldn't find it. I slid back down beside Danny.
"How are your eyes doing?"
Danny shook his head, blinking hard.
"They're getting better."
Leanne came running up.
"Dad, you need to come home. Jamie is hurt."
Looking over while still wiping the crust from his eyes, Doc asked,
"Did she get shot?"
Leanne nodded as Doc and I were both getting to our feet. We took off running as fast as we could. Hanging with these military guys and a young, healthy teenager made me feel like shit. While I was in better shape now than before the day, I still couldn't stick with them. Doc left me in his wake. As I came up on the porch, Jamie was laid out in front of the door. The dress that was so pretty before was now covered in blood and pulled up onto her chest. Doc was looking at a dressing covering a wound in her abdomen.
"Did it exit?" Doc asked.
"I don't know," Jamie replied.
"We didn't even look," Jess said.
"I'm going to roll you over and take a look. It's going to hurt." Jamie gritted her teeth and nodded. Doc gave instructions to Jess and Fred on how to roll her onto her side. Working together, they gently rolled her to her side. Jamie let out a yelp, and Doc quickly ran a hand along her back and looked. It was smeared with blood.
"Looks like it went through. We need to get another dressing on it," Doc said, as he started digging through his bag.
Finding the bandage, he and the girls applied another dressing to the exit.
"I'm starting to get cold," Jamie said.
"I know. Just hang in there for another minute, and we'll get you fixed up," Doc quickly said. Looking at Fred, he said, "Get some blankets." Fred grabbed blankets from the girls' beds and brought them back. They wrapped Jamie up and moved her into the living room. Doc took a space blanket from his bag and unfolded it, laying it out on the sofa. Then he had the girls help him get Jamie laid out on it. They elevated her feet with some pillows, and she started to feel a little better. Doc then started an IV, giving her a precious supply of fluid.
"We need to get to town," Doc said.
"There's no way we can go tonight," I said.
Will she be all right until morning? Jess asked.
I can hear you, Jamie moaned.
Yeah, she can make it until morning, but we need to leave as early as possible. Seeing that Jamie was taken care of, I went to Mel. She was sitting on the edge of Little Bit's bed with her. A faint glow from the lantern in the living room barely lit the space. I sat down on the side of the bed and wrapped my arm around them.
You guys all right? I asked.
Mel nodded.
Yeah, we're fine. She's just scared.
Little Bit peeked at me.
They came into the house.
I was thunderstruck.
What?
They came in through the sliding glass door. Didn't you see it? Mel asked. I leapt to my feet.
Hell no, I didn't see it.
Mel grabbed my arm.
They're dead.
I looked at her.
They? How many?
She held up three fingers but said nothing. I looked out the door, then back to her.
I'll go check on it.
As I was walking out of the bedroom, I heard Sarge's voice in the living room. Glancing in, I saw him and Thad and went the other way into the kitchen. There were two bodies on the kitchen floor and another lying just outside the shattered glass door.
They were dead all right, and the floor was covered in blood.
I grabbed one of the bodies by the feet and dragged it out onto the back porch. As I dropped the legs onto the deck, Thad came through the door with the second one.
Thanks, man, I said.
Thad nodded.
No problem. There's six more on the road down by Danny's house.
Six? Holy shit.
Thad smiled.
There's more out back where Dalton set up his little trap. Whatever he put out there, it sure worked. There's pieces of them hanging in the trees. They're splattered all over the place.
Doing some quick math, I said, so somewhere between 12 and 15 of theirs are dead?
And only one wounded on our side, Thad said.
We just got lucky is all. It can't last forever.
Come on, Morg, we're doing pretty good. We're holding our own.
What happened with the six down the road? I asked.
We came running out the gate at Danny's and ran slap into them. Mike and Ted crashed into them, and they all went flailing to the ground. Me and Sarge got to work on them, and we killed them all.
Nodding, I noted again.
We're lucky. Thad gripped my shoulder. I'll take lucky any day, Morgan.
Seeing just how lucky we'd been really weighed on me. Shaking my head, I said,
but what if our luck runs out? We've got to fix this once and for all. If this keeps going, luck isn't going to cut it.
We went back in the house. Mel had put Little Bit to bed. Mel said she was upset because she didn't have her blanket. It was on Jamie at the moment. She finally settled down when Mel gave her one of my poncho liners. As we were talking, Dalton stuck his head in the door and nodded for me to follow him. Once outside, I saw he had a grim look.
What is it?
He pointed to the bench on my porch. I looked and saw Jace and Edie sitting there. It took a moment for it to sink in, but looking in the direction of their house, I could see the fire that still raged there.
Is there any chance? I asked.
His reply was a slow shaking of his head. I looked at Thad.
Still think we're lucky?
Chapter 4. Thad and I stood staring at the scorched and smoking remains of the house. It was early, and a heavy fog blanketed the ground, giving the entire scene a spooky feel. The air was heavy with an acrid odor of fire and loss. Little was left, the frame of the mobile home really the only thing recognizable. Thad leaned on a shovel as he surveyed the scene. Of all things that have happened to this point, I'm sure this was the hardest thing for him to look at, but he revealed nothing as we stood in silence.
I'm not looking forward to this, I said.
It's an unpleasant thing, Thad replied.
At least they got the kids out.
Thad glanced over.
How are the kids?
They're at Bobby's. She's taking care of them. Doc checked the skin pop on them earlier and said Jace was positive for antibodies, but didn't appear to be sick. Said there's a chance he was able to fight it off. Edie was negative.
That's good. But now those babies have to grow up without their mama and daddy, Thad lamented. That may be true, but they're not going to be alone, I replied. Then I looked at Thad. They're a part of our family now, and we'll raise them, all of us. Thad nodded, and I added, You're a big uncle now again. Thad smiled. Guess that makes Sarge the crazy grandpa then. Laughing, I replied, Yeah, old mean-ass grandpa. Thad chuckled and turned his attention to the grisly task before us. You ready to do this? Letting out a long breath, I responded, No. Me neither, but let's get it done. With gloved hands, we worked our way into the remains of the house.